With your help, we can continue to fight for freedom. This is not possible without your generosity. Join our quest for the truth and our freedom by simply visiting www.realitycheck.radio/donate to make a difference today.
I've been looking forward to having Freddie Ponton, our correspondent, I guess, a French independent researcher and journalist, returning to RCR. I don't know if you know, Freddie, and great to have you back, that we went off air for a while, but our supporters came back. They supported us. We got back on air. Now we're bigger, faster, stronger, and it's great that we are because we can have you back. So you may or may not have known what was going on behind the scenes, but that was what was going on behind the scenes.
Yes, well, it's good to be back, definitely, and I'm a big fan of your show. I think you guys do a tremendous work, and you deserve to be back on air. So it's glad, and I'm really glad that your campaign went well. I'm not too aware about the behind, you know, the scene, of course, but it doesn't really matter. What matters is we're here, and we are capable of informing the audience of the latest in Europe and around the world, and making sure that people are up to scratch with what's really going on, because a lot is happening, as you know.
This is a huge story, isn't it? The crash of the helicopter, the death of the president, and I think, was it the foreign minister? What are people saying about this crash? I've seen footage showing misty weather, not good conditions for flying, particularly in helicopters, a remote, what looked like a remote area. What are people saying happened here?
Yeah, it's a very strange story because the president, the Iranian president Ibrahim Raisi, was headed to the inaugurations of the Kiskalasi Dam in the Azeri region of Azerbaijan. So it's the third dam that Iran and Azerbaijan has been working on. So this has been a good and ongoing relationship. And they've used this opportunity to have not only the inauguration of the dam, but a major diplomatic meeting happening on the ground there. And I think that clearly both countries are trying to strengthen their quite tumultuous relationship, especially over the years. You've had Azerbaijan's, there was a gunshot against the Azerbaijan embassy in Tehran, in Iran, in 2023. There's been obviously this ongoing tensions because Azerbaijan is entertaining a strong relationship and economic relationship with Israel. Israel is the biggest oil customer of Azerbaijan's with, I think in January, it's about $300 million. Deal. So that makes Israel a prime a customer of Azerbaijan. And of course, that creates tensions with Iran. But beside that, I think both countries understand that from a regional point of view, it's important that these guys work together. So this was a successful meeting. As you said, Raisi was not traveling alone. He was traveling with Amir Abdullahian. Hossein Abdullahian is the foreign minister. We saw him many times in the United Nations, in New York, many meetings in attendance. And it seems that upon the return journey, there were three helicopters flying in a convoy formation, as presidential convoy is always done. And then they basically lost contact with the presidential helicopters. The two others made it safe back home. But the presidential helicopter seems to have got some issues, which has been blamed on the weather. So we don't know. I mean, it's quite obvious that the weather was bad. There was blizzard. There was fog. There was terrible conditions for flying. And helicopters is next. Has never been safe, even in 2024. So the plane went down. It went down in the Strand region because it's a region that is quite mountainous. It has this is not a place you want to land, literally. And it seems to have had a hard landing. That's the term that has been used. And it landed in an area that's called Uzi. It's a small village, and it's in the Vazekan regions. So you're in the really northern part of Iran, and it's really at the border, if you will, the southern border of Azerbaijan and Armenia. So it took them about 20 hours to find the aircraft. And when they got there, apparently most of the plane was burned and there was no one alive. So nine people lost their life in this flight, and they waited for the weather to clear and to have basically investigators to come to the crash sites and understand exactly what happened. So that's where we are at the moment. Everybody's waiting. The president's death has been confirmed. The funerals are actually going to die, so there's going to be a lot of mourning in the countries. We saw the Iranian leader the supreme leader of Iran, Al-Khamenei, has basically given 5 days of mourning for the people of Iran. So it's a big shock for the nation. And we can see that Iran is normally very reasonable in terms of, you know, expressing views. And they've been very cautious about putting out there any kind of entertaining, any kind of conspiracy at all. They just want to mourn. This is the way it should be done. And then after the investigations, and we're going to find out more about this.
And the public of Iran, were these politicians and leaders popular? Were they popular?
Well, that's the big questions. Of course, I think, to be honest, and I've been reading on Iran for quite some time, I think there's a mixed crowd in Iran, and there's always been a mixed crowd in Iran. But I think Raisi was not, he was actually quite like, funny enough, compared to what the Western media is trying to project. He had some kind of popularity because he was an excellent diplomat. It's really about remembering his work at this stage and what he's done. And this is not some very charismatic leader, like I imagine Ajad or all the other guys that came before him that basically have perhaps more charisma. But I think as far as diplomatic and the ability to strengthen regional, ties with the local partner, regional partners, even in partners in the West, I think he was probably one of the best presidents in achieving that. We can remember him, for example, for Saudi Arabia, putting back this relationship with Saudi Arabia, normalizing this relationship. We saw him very active with the nuclear deal as well. And of course, this is someone that has also been playing a lot of attentions in pushing Iran into the SCO, the Shanghai Corporation, as well as into the BRICS. So he's done a lot, but behind the scene, I think it's a very quiet man. It was a very quiet man and a great diplomat. And this is going to be an interesting political transitions that we're all going to look forward to, trying to understand exactly what's coming next. You know, what kind of leader? Is there anyone with such pedigree that can come and deliver for Iran?
Yeah, and what timing with everything? I mean, you listed all those things, but there's also a potential conflict, you know, tottering around as well. And these are two crucial people from Iran's point of view at this time, and they've lost them. The timing is incredible.
The timing is incredible. It's unprecedented. And I think that Iran is a bit under the shock at this moment. But I think there's going to be continuity. There's great, strong leadership. And if you look at the structure of this government, they've got 50 days to put an election together, which is very short, short time. You know. But I think they'll manage to come up. I don't see any real noticeable change as far as the political directions and where the country is going. I think they're just going to strengthen their actual positions, and we'll see what kind of leaders they're going to come up with.
Then we had the news. Well, before that, we had the news. The Slovakian Prime Minister Robert Fico was the subject of an attempted assassination, and it sounds like it was a close-run thing for him. Really close.
Yeah, it's as close as he gets when you get four bullets, you know, by shaking someone's hand. It's really unprecedented. I mean, the last time something happened, not even close, but down those lines, was about 20 years ago in Europe. So it's really a big news. It was quite shocking, to be honest. And yes, I mean, as you said, it's two pro-Russian leaders basically having to face death, literally, because, I mean, Robert Fico was very lucky to survive this kind of assassination attempt. So very lucky to be alive. He's still in a recovering process. And yes, there are a lot of questions around this assassination attempt. We saw the Slovakian intelligence as well as the police investigation is moving forward now. They initially thought this was a kind of a lone wolf operations, but very quickly at the early part of the investigation, they realized that there were a lot of anomalies. And at this moment in time, I think both on Sunday, we saw the prime ministers and the president coming forward with the media and saying that they're now entertaining the possibility that there was a conspiracy, there was more than one person involved in the assassination. And that is mainly due to some of the communications, social media and internet communications that has been that belongs obviously to the 71 years old man that was responsible for this assassination attempt. And all his communication basically were taken offline, was shut down. And that they found an extremely bizarre that this man, suddenly someone outside of his circle, and that includes his wife, were able to shut down all his communication on internet and social media platforms. So someone is acting behind the scene, and they think that right now they've arrested 50 people. And I think it's moving.
50.
I think, wow. Yeah, quite a bit. I think last time I read a report, I don't want to say stupid things, but that's, I think, what I've read. And, yeah. It's a lot of people have been interrogated. It's an ongoing investigation. But really, when you look at the profile of the assassin, nothing is making sense. Guy's 71 years old. He's a retiree. He's an amateur poet. And he has worked as a mall security guard. But more importantly, he has absolutely no political group affiliations. So we can see that he has a profile that is almost too perfect, you know.
Yeah.
Like kind of an intellectual that lost it for a moment and decided
a created kind of persona.
Yeah, that's from the assessment. I think any intelligence officer in that will look at someone that simply doesn't fit the bill. So is the profile created to satisfy the curious people, the investigators? That is a possibility. Was he planted? Are we also looking at the old NATO hidden army in Europe? You know, after the Cold War, we have the Gladio, and we have many operations and assassination campaign across Europe, which still today I haven't been explained, despite a huge amount of evidence and a lot of people that came forward. So some amongst journalists and historians are remembered of this particular time in time where people were disappearing. There was sabotage. There were, you know, bombing. There was, you know, people dying basically, and political leaders being disposed of. And eventually we find out later on that NATO had a secret army and were basically disposing of those in support of Russian communism, or you know, disposing of people that had different view that what the United States wanted for Europe. So yes, it's kind of a taking us back to that particular era, and hopefully the investigation will reveal exactly who's behind that, because Robert Fico is an extraordinary person. Despite the fact whether you agree or not with his view, it's irrelevant. He's someone that has a lot of political courage. He's stand against COVID big time. He's actually launching investigations against COVID. He's not interested in, you know, listening to what Europe has to say or the WHO. He's against the pandemic treaty. So that's one side. He has a bit of a kind of a quarrel, if you will, with the European Union and this massive vaccination campaign that has obviously left a lot of people injured in Slovakia. So he's a bit against that, and he wants an investigation to reveal and to go to the bottom of that. And then, of course, on the other side, Paul, you have a man that has refused to use his taxpayers' money to support the Ukrainian effort. And he's been pretty strong about not supporting Ukraine. So on both sides, the guys is a little bit of a, you know, he's one of us, basically. We could say that.
Like, I mean, I'm listening to you, and I'm thinking, take your pick of anyone. Right.
Yeah. So no surprise as far as someone. I think he has a list of enemy that is probably as long as his arm, you know. So
can I ask a stupid question? It is actually confirmed that the person, the 71-year-old, did actually fire the gun. They know that for sure, I take it.
And there is literally a live video of him doing it. So
okay, so that's on tape.
And there are very suspicious people behaving. I mean, I did a kind of a crime scene analysis quickly just on the video. I've put that onto my softwares, and I started to look at it. And I was very interesting. And I think, and I'm sure, I'm quite confident that the intelligence service of Slovakia will have catches. I mean, I saw a few things that definitely as worth investigating, especially a woman with a red wig. I think they should really look into that. She's a very interesting. She's passive and non-passive. She's aware of what was happening. The reaction is not a reaction of shock. We can clearly see that the woman is expecting something to happen. She's involved in some way, in some fashion. Which way, that's for, of course, the police and the investigators to reveal. But she's definitely a person of interest.
Fascinating. Yeah, you can kind of tell from the body language cues and how people are looking around and stuff like that, if they're kind of anticipating something.
Well, Paul, if someone's shooting a gun next to you, I can tell you, you're going to bump out.
I'm freaking out.
Exactly. If you're not a military person, you're not trained, you're not expecting it, you're definitely going to be like, you know, on the defensive. You're going to show some kind of emotion, some kind of surprise. That woman is just, she shake the hands of Robert Fico. She keep him in position. Okay, she's a fixer. She fixes him.
Right, gotcha.
Suddenly, bang, 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 four times. And then she's moving back. She's giving a little tap on the back of the bodyguards, and she's moving like nothing happened. That's just not a normal behavior.
Well, that's interesting. And what about the future for Robert Fico? He was seriously injured. Obviously, critically, it was said at one stage. He's obviously going to survive, but he'll be out for a while, I take it.
Yes, I mean, the recovery process is going to be difficult. I think at the moment, both the president-elect, Peter Pellegrini, and the outgoing president, Zuzana, both called for unity. So they obviously understand the meaning of what happened, how dangerous that is. And Fico has predicted it. You know, if you read some of Fico's comments here, you know, earlier this year, he said it. He said it's only a matter of time before a political leader in our country is going to get shot down because the price has gone absolutely bonkers and they've let basically people, a lot of injuries, lot of insults to politicians. It's clearly an open war in the media, and there is definitely a portions of Slovakia that is not behind Fico. Now, who are behind these people? Who are manipulating Slovakia? Because this regime change are the speciality, of organizations, like the Soros or the CIA. This is what these guys do. They inject a lot of money in countries, in NGOs and organizations to promote a pro-European kind of agenda. And we saw that in Georgia. We've seen at this moment in time in Georgia as well. So I think any country that is non-aligned with NATO objectives or with European objectives will suffer, unfortunately, the wrath of these agencies and these NGOs, which are not working in for the people of this country. They're working for their political interests to put a puppet in their governments and trying to, to control the entire region. That's what's going on. It's nothing really has changed. We're back to this Cold War with these covert activities all across Europe, and it's becoming very dangerous to speak out.
Yeah, obviously. Okay, Gaza, the reporting of Israel, Gaza has kind of tapered off here. Compared to the intensity of a few weeks ago. So why don't you update us? I've got here Rafah to Netzarim Corridor, floating piers. I've heard that being reported here. And Blue Beach Plan. So let's go through those. What are they?
Yes, it's interesting. Look, I mean, there's a lot to say on Gaza, and we don't have like 10 minutes to do that. But what I will say to you, what's important to see is the logistical move. If you're going to start to move 1.4 million people, you need to have a plan. That is the first thing you need to do. Now, the Israeli military, the IDF, has taken control over the Rafah crossing. That's a real big move. That's definitely unnerved the Egyptians because this was part of the plan. But we can clearly see that the Israelis has yet to come up with a plan as far as displacing internally displaced populations and to present a plan to Joe Biden for him to greenlight this attack on Rafah. I think at this stage, Joe Biden, nobody's listening to Joe Biden anymore. And I think Israel is now very much looking forward after smoothing the ground. A lot of airstrike at the moment in Rafah, still in Khan Yunis as well, and all the center parts of the Gaza Strip. And what they did is they forced basically the population with zero clan, couple of tents, but just basically moving this population back to the center of the Gaza Strip, away from the south, and then even further to a place is called Deir al-Bala. Deir al-Bala is very close, about 7 miles from the Netzarim Road, what the Palestinians call the 10th Street. Now, this Netzarim Corridor, not the road, sorry, the Netzarim Corridor, and this Netzarim Corridor is very important because this is what people call a demilitarized zone, which basically split the Gaza Strip from west to east, and with a huge amount of checkpoints, and gives the ability for the Israeli to completely isolate the northern part of Gaza, Gaza City and North Gaza, which is where obviously the aid, the humanitarian aid is trying to get in, because the food is not coming in, the medical supply is not coming in, and therefore they needed to have a plan, and the international committee wanted a plan to bring aid, despite the IDF restrictions, to bring aid into the northern Gaza before we are really witnessing the death of hundreds of thousands of people that's still there.
Yeah, so through hunger.
Yes, so starvation seems to have been used, and it's funny because it really goes alongside what Karim Khan, the chief prosecutor of the ICC, said yesterday when he basically confirmed that it requested the pretrial chambers to approve warrants for the arrest of Prime Minister Netanyahu and Yoav Gallant, the Israeli Minister of Defense. So it goes alongside, because it's actually, the video is online. I posted it on my Twitter account as well. But it's really a public source. So you can check out what Karim Khan is saying about Israel and activities in the Gaza Strip, and why he has issues, and what he thinks he has no choice but to issue a warrant for the arrest of these two political leaders. So it's very important to see that starvation, violence, the killing of civilians, all that is now confirmed by the ICC, and it's clearly backed with evidence that has been gathered by the International Criminal Court. So when we see that, of course, we understand, and we better understand the Joe Biden plans with this famous floating piers and this Trident piers, which was a symbol off the coast of Israel, off the coast of Ashdod, which is just off to Gaza. And they've assembled this pier. They were supposed to basically tow it back to the Gaza shoreline last week, but the weather was pretty bad. There was a lot of sea, so they had to wait a little bit. But the idea of investing $320 million in a Trident piers, in a floating piers that you're going to plug in, and you're going to plug in where? You're going to plug in at the Netzarim corridor, where there's all these checkpoints and everything, which mean what? Which mean that the IDF is going to be in control of any kind of aid that's going to come into the Gaza Strip. So we are back to a crossing, basically. The whole idea was to avoid a crossing, use the maritime corridors from Cyprus to the Gaza shoreline to be able to bypass and to support, basically, humanitarian aid relief, because obviously Israel has hindered the entry of aid into the Gaza Strip. Now, listen to this, because that's very important. I've done a bit of research, and I think that's going to be interesting for the audience to know. The origin of these floating piers is actually misunderstood. There was a foundation in Switzerland, it's called the Maritime Humanitarian Aid Foundation. They have an operational arm, it's called FOGBO. FOGBO is a company, it's been opened really recently, a few months ago. And this is a company that is made of former CIA, former defense operatives, and people that have worked with the U.S. Department of Defense. Now, and there's a lot of people with great experience in humanitarian relief as well. Now, this company came up with a plan, it's called the Blue Beach Plan. And the idea for this plan was to actually lease some ocean barges that will be able to land in the northern parts of the Gaza Strip, where obviously the aid is the must, required. This is where it's much needed. And this was presented to the United Nations. Everybody understood that the plan was a good idea. There was no need for a floating piers, because these barges can literally come all the way down to the shorelines and open up and deliver aid straight onto the beach. So there's absolutely no need for floating piers. And the initial plan was clearly to go into the northern part of Gaza, to deliver, because people knew there was a huge crisis there. The UN understood that. And then Biden came up with the IDF, with Israeli governments, and they decided to say, okay, let's do something, but we're not going to do it in the northern part of Gaza. We don't want that. Let these people starve. Let these people die. We're going to do it towards the Netzarim corridor, by the 10th Street, on the Gaza Strip, center Gaza. And then we're going to have a floating piers we'll assemble and we'll bring it to the shoreline when we feel it's time to do so. So it's a complete project that has been almost kind of taken away from these guys, and it's been reshaped in a way to make it a military program. And that's really, really interesting, because right now this this Trident Pierce is a U.S.-led operation with the U.S. Navy airlift, naval lift operations, and it's only going to be there for 2 months, Paul.
Okay.
I can't believe it.
What have they got in mind then? It sounds like there's something in mind. First of all, you can control any access to that shoreline through that, I would imagine, no matter what. Not having that.
Well, I was listening to Cameron Hume, the director of the Maritime Humanitarian Aid Foundation. He was actually interviewed recently, and he said, We have no problem with Fogboat to use the floating piers, but this is not our initial ideas. But they say we can't really understand why this project is only going to be there 2 months. We spent $320 million on something that literally is going to disappear after 2 months. Nothing is making sense. So what is the plan here? Are they giving us a deadline? Are they telling us basically this is a humanitarian project, you know? But it isn't. It's to accommodate Joe Biden's political campaign. It's a flash in the pan, and they're using American taxpayers' money to do a little campaign because they're trying to kind of
placate that grumpy.
They're trying to bait the youth, the young Democrats back into the poll because they're not there at the moment.
Wow. All right, and just to finish up, France to send troops to Ukraine, reality versus fiction. There's been talk about it. Macron's sort of floated the boat. There are military personnel from France in Ukraine, I take it, already?
Well, the thing is that we've been hearing for the last past few months, you know, Olaf Scholz and Emmanuel Macron, the French president, about deploying and entertaining the possibility of deploying French troops and the French Foreign Legion in Ukraine. Now, they've been deployed to Romania. That's what we know. There's 100 up to 300 troops that were deployed there for training, interoperability with other troops from Belgium and other. But as far as official deployments, there's no official deployment of Ukrainian of French troops in Ukraine. And if it is, it's undercover. It's not known, and it's not been officially announced by the French government. Now, what happened, and the reason why people have actually been under the impression that this was happening, is because on French national television, they were promoting various scenarios as to how to use the French Foreign Legions and what would be the best way for them to play a role, which will come as a support for the Ukrainian armed forces, not as a participating forces in the conflict, but rather a logistical support. So very briefly, the idea was to create a green line to contain the Belarusian border, and having like a spread of, you know, maybe 10,000 men in the northern part in Belarusia, not to get involved, but to show that you cannot attack us while we're defending the rear of the Ukrainian forces. And this was the idea. And then on the other side, from Romania, the plan was to integrate the rest of the forces to move towards protecting Odessa in the south. So that was the two move, and then a kind of a Maginot line by the French, which will come and protect the rear of the Ukrainians. So very weird scenario, definitely from a military point of view, something very questionable, because if you cannot be as a NATO members in Ukraine, which is at war with Russia. And what happens if a French guy gets killed, if someone, the Russians are opening fires on you because you're there and you're operating as a military operation, what's going to happen? Do you have the right to respond, or you just literally take your bag and go home? What's the plan here? So the whole thing is ludicrous, and I think it's just for entertainment, because there is definitely a sense of desperation in NATO. I think everybody understands the military situation on the ground. It's not looking good. Definitely not looking good. We saw last week this massive push from the Russian towards Kharkiv, although Putin says not interested in capturing Kharkiv, second largest cities in Ukraine. But I believe from a strategic point of view and my own analysis, I think point the fingers at Odessa. And I think clearly, I think Putin is going to be interested in capturing Odessa as soon as possible, and probably over the summer. So that's something to look forward to see exactly how militarily this conflict is going to evolve. But it's quite clear that right now the Ukrainian is lacking of human resources, of personnel. There's no replacements. The lines are fragile. There's no real line of defense anymore. It goes through like butter, as the press was saying. And it's a real, you know, precarious situations for Ukraine. And I don't think NATO can do anything. Bringing more artillery and tank is not going to cut it. And of course, we saw the Russian troops now, the new fresh troops are coming in, over 200,000 men ready in the rear, moving in and already showing some results. So unfortunately, I think that Putin will push to the Dnieper River and try to control this entire region and see what's going to happen with Odessa over the summer. That's my analysis.
Wow. As always, Freddie, great to hear your commentary and your analysis, as you say. Really sharp onto it. Our listeners benefit from that so much. I look forward to catching up with you again. Have a great day or overnight, as it is where you are, and we'll catch up again soon. Thanks so much again.
We'll do that. Thank you very much. Thanks, Paul. Bye-bye.
With your help, we can continue to fight for freedom. This is not possible without your generosity. Join our quest for the truth and our freedom. Simply visit www.realitycheck.radio/donate to make a difference today.